Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo, now in its last week of production here on GCNLive.com. I am Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today, sitting in for Jim Fetzer on a chilly Thursday, November 20, 2008. My special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood, in my opinion, the leading physical scientist investigating what happened at the World Trade Center on the morning of 9/11. Good afternoon, Dr. Wood.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I want to spend a few moments to look at Dr. Wood's credentials, because this is so amazing. Dr. Wood received her BS degree in civil engineering with a specialty in structural. Gee, I think that applies to the World Trade Center. Her master's in engineering mechanics and applied physics. Bingo. And her PhD is in materials engineering science in 1992 from the Department of Engineering Science and Mechanics at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. And her dissertation involved development of an experimental method to measure thermal stresses in bimaterial joints. Wow. This is so, it's just an amazing fit here. Up until 2006, she was an assistant professor in the mechanical engineering, I wanted to say ME, but I better spell it up, at Clemson in Clemson, South Carolina. And she also did a postdoc work at Virginia Tech. And one of her research interests is biomimicry, or applying mechanical structures of biological materials to engineering design. Also, gee, this has got connection with the Twin Towers. And she's investigated the deformation behavior of materials and structures with complex geometries and complex materials properties. And I'm going to skip. She's also an expert in the use of Moray interferometry, a full-field optical method used in stress analysis, which is, I believe, connected to the method used to destroy the World Trade Center. And we'll find out if I'm right there. And Dr. Wood and her students have developed optical systems with various wavelengths and waveguides. She has over 60 technical publications in refereed journals, conference proceedings, monographs, and technical reports. Well, that is breathtaking, and how well it applies, I think, to the mystery of what made the buildings at the World Trade Center mostly go away. And lately, I want to raise some of these issues regarding attacks. Dr. Wood's been on doing some radio interviews, I think a couple of dozen over the last month. And one of the things that's come up is that there is a bill proposing a 9/11 investigation in Congress. It's co-sponsored by 8 House reps. And there's a bunch of people agitated that among the hypotheses to investigate, they actually mention, as I recall, directed energy weapons or some kind of exotic energy weapon. And some of the attacks are inexplicable unless they feel this is somehow threatening to bodyguard the official story, or the fallback official story. So, Dr. Wood, why don't you explain what seems to be going on there?
Well, it's just a very strange phenomenon. Like when you get 150 emails in your mailbox with all this flurry of activity, and it's like somebody just sat on a nail or something and got bitten, by a bee.
And the other side, the one name that comes to mind right away is Victoria Ashley, who's up to less than good, it seems, and she doesn't have anything scientific or related to forensics or the criminal investigation, but always jumps in and accuses various people of being a COINTELPRO or disinfo. And this bill, as I recall, includes some 14 hypotheses, and apparently it was a little too expansive for the likes of Victoria Ashley, especially including the directed energy thesis.
Yeah, what I saw about the bill having, I call it the kitchen sink, in there.
Yes.
I think it just states so clearly the American people haven't gotten an answer yet, and they want one. They need one.
Right. They haven't gotten an answer from any official sources thus far, right? We've had FEMA,
right.
NIST, the 9/11 Commission.
And if NIST had done its job, there wouldn't be all this questioning.
Right, and it's still gnawing at the nation.
But of all of those 14, the kitchen sink there, why is mine the only one that really bothers them?
That question answers itself, doesn't it?
Yep.
It's amazing how they single this out. Now, this warms my heart in a certain odd sense, in that when the attacks pick up, it must be that the truth in the form of the directed energy hypothesis is gaining ground.
Yeah, otherwise they wouldn't be so worried. I can think of some other of those 14. Actually, I don't know if this one is included in those 14 or not, but it's been around a while, is the pods under the planes, and there's been DVDs put out there on this, and it never gets attacked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I guess Dave Von Kleist would claim otherwise. He pleads the victim. I know he did that Madison, Wisconsin conference organized by Jim Fetzer.
But he doesn't have the
I never see him really get attacked. What's that, Dr. Wood?
He doesn't have an entire forum dedicated to attacking him, or an entire journal.
Yeah, I think he's a shrimp compared to the attacks you get.
And he's gotten DVDs out there, so it's quite interesting when it's like all hands on deck.
The amazing thing to me about close inspection of the cartoon is he stops with the pod. He doesn't show you the plane morphing nonviolently, disappearing into the building. I mean, that's the real interesting part about that. Instead, he wants you to stop short and look under the wing and the root of the wing and see if there's a pod image there in what appears an unbelievable image to begin with, but and the plane image doesn't decelerate notably as
yeah,
it
there's
disappears.
There's a lot that the trolls could tackle there, but they don't.
Yes, right. Okay, well then, even though I'm not all that big on another official investigation, I can't help but wish them Godspeed, because who knows? While it's true, Washington investigations, as Alan Stang says, are designed to cover up the truth, still some truth could leak out, and these different venues are the more the merrier. Well, there was another attack on Dr. Wood's work, as well as Fetzer and Reynolds, by Reprehensor, a 9/11 blogger. And, it looks like we will discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today on The Dynamic Duo, and our special guest is Dr. Judy Wood, the leading physical scientist investigating 9/11. Well, Dr. Wood, before the break, I brought up the issue of another attack, mostly directed at you. It's great of you to do that for me. I don't get that many. The Reprehensor, the anonymous Reprehensor, put out an article here a few days ago on 911blogger.com. And what seemed to be bothering him? Did he find a mistake in your scientific work? And if so, did he make a specific citation and try to get you to correct it?
Well, of course, it isn't about the evidence. That's what they don't want you to look at.
Yeah. So So what seemed to be his problem? Now, he goes on with these allegations about how you tried to con him into some kind of action against Dr. Stephen Jones and related charges, and however, he doesn't seem to offer any evidence to back up these allegations.
And I think he was talking about some time period, in 2006,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of odd. Like, why now?
Yeah, you waited a couple of years, I guess, for it to ripen or something, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if what the cause is.
Well, is it 100% truth that he's revealing in these allegations?
I only looked at some of it because I didn't see any truth.
Okay.
And so, like, including the issue about the aluminum.
Oh, yeah.
The issue was that Stephen Jones had said that aluminum stays silvery at all temperatures and never glows. And
yeah, it never glows reddish, orange, or
right.
yellow.
And it glows like anything else that gets hot. And my student and I had demonstrated that to him because I couldn't find pictures on the Internet. So we, took pictures in my lab and sent them to him. And he still was denying it. He thought it was something to do with the latitude of Clemson as to why it doesn't glow here, but because it or why it glows here, it doesn't glow where he is.
Strange physics going on there in Clemson.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, this is something that's in textbooks. You can look it up. You know, the emissivity changes with temperature. At room temperature, the emissivity is low. But, it's low for other things, too. But you
and
heat
as
it
you
up,
pointed out to me and perhaps others, you weren't really doing an experiment. You were doing a demonstration of a well-known phenomenon.
Right. I later found a nice example on the Internet, but I hadn't at that time. It's on my front page. It shows they're making a replica of the Wright Brothers engine out of aluminum. They're pouring the aluminum, and they have to wear sunglasses because it's so bright. It's glowing.
Now, so at least he brought up a physical or evidential issue.
But he brought it up and claimed it was about aluminum melt, whether or not aluminum melts.
Yeah, so he's distorting what the issue was.
Yeah, and he cites the article, Aluminum Glows is the name of the article. Like, oops.
So we are faced with the same choice. Is this just stupidity / ignorance, or is it some deliberate attempt to deceive?
Yeah. And either way you look at it, why bother?
Right. Yeah. Now, you were pointing out to me here earlier this afternoon that Rep. Hunter took it to the Democratic Underground Forum and didn't get the reception. So he's trying to spread the word.
I think it run its course. We're in his camp, and so he took it to this other camp, and it was pretty funny. It got no traction at all.
Yeah. Some of the resident trolls there didn't think Rep. Hunter had anything new or insightful or valid. They were pounding on him pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of heartwarming. It goes back to the same issue of if this is such bad work, won't it take care of itself? Why do you need to be pounding on this all the time and not really contributing any alternative evidence or interpretation of the evidence? Well, that takes me to another attacker on Dr. Wood, who was initially a friend of yours, maybe on probation, and that is Ace Baker. Has agitated over your parallel with the Hutchison effect or field effects, and he Ace Baker claims that John Hutchison's work is fraudulent, that John is a complete faker. Where is that these days? I guess Ace is continuing his work in his lab, trying to discredit your work, and more importantly, it seems to him, John Hutchison's.
Yeah, why is it so important? And he offered John $100,000 to prove that the it was for real. Well, you know, it's been real for 30 years now. And so, you know, John signed the agreement and, you know, picked the day and had CNN show up and film it for a story that they're doing. And he went ahead and did his demonstration. But Ace wasn't there. So if Ace doesn't show up, he still wants to maintain that it didn't happen, that he didn't see it happen.
Yeah, well, he sheltered himself from that.
It's like you put your hands over your eyes.
From him, I gather.
Yeah. It's kind of like the little kid who puts his fingers in his ears and says, I can't hear you, I can't hear you.
I guess if he did go, there's a rather high risk that he could forfeit his funds, at least if you had an impartial third-party referee
right
there. Well, we are hearing a little bit of the Beatles, and this is your guest host on the Dynamic Duo today, Morgan Reynolds. We're interviewing Dr. Judy Wood, the leading physical scientist investigating 9/11. See you on the other side of the break. To go back to our conversation, Dr. Wood, Ace Baker, who is an entertainer, musician, video expert, or at least he says he is, and he does have some expertise, clearly, in that area. He doesn't have any training in physical science that I know of. He's not a dumb man by any means, but he is a smart guy. But what I don't see, and I'm not a physical scientist, although I think I know a little bit about the scientific method. What I don't understand is if you propose, first of all, you look at all this evidence, anomalous evidence, cars upside down and dustification and roundish holes in plate glass and all
and
these.
Where'd the building go?
Yeah, where'd the building go is number one. You look at all this evidence, and the trail of evidence leads to this thesis that it must have been a directed energy weapon, and we have evidence, you've gathered evidence that shows that these exist. My trouble is, how can a non-expert who doesn't know anything about these beams and what happens with their interference in these field effects? I mean, this certainly goes back to Nikolai Tesla, if not earlier, who is credited, among other inventions, with the wireless radio. How can he just, right at the outset, insist John Hutchison's a fake? Why couldn't there be beams that would offset the force of gravity, a field effect? I don't understand the mentality. Now, I should ask him, I gather, but what platform is he operating from to insist these are impossible things, especially when you see Hutchison's been doing these things for over 30 years, and what he does, you show it on your website, the anomalous effects. The Hutchison effects map, it seems like, perfectly into what the evidence shows happened at the World Trade Center.
But one thing that strikes me with all this, energy being expended to try to counter it is why spend your energy trying to get people to think that it doesn't exist instead of using your energy to say what if? What I've come to the conclusion of is that 9/11 was the demonstration of a new technology, a new kind of physics, and a phenomenon that we hadn't seen in your face so strongly before, but once you start looking, you see it's been there for 100 years.
And there are at least two aspects of it. The one that was obvious to me was this was the the U.S. And allies, the military industrial complex demonstration to potential enemies subject colonies that you better not step out of line or defy us, or we'll turn this on you. We've just shown you what it can do, okay?
Yeah, but I don't think we even need to, figure out who done it, that part of it. But when I started down this road, I'd never really heard of directed energy weapons. I didn't know what that was. But looking at the data told me what it was and that it exists. There was no other conclusion I could have come to, and with my background in interferometry, what I saw was the interference of energy that was causing these things. There was just no other explanation.
Mm-hmm.
That some form of energy that would interfere, and that's how you could get zones of constructive and destructive interference, analogous to my background in optics. Even though this wasn't optical, it wasn't in the visual range, it would behave in a similar fashion.
But this new technology has a destructive application. But the other side of it was, hey, this is incredible power, and it could be harnessed for constructive, peaceful uses.
Yeah, there's something I put on my bio page on my website. We stand at the dawn of an entirely new age. Man has in his hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter and the ability to split the earth in half on a moment's notice. Yeah, it gives scorched earth policy a new significance. The technology that was demonstrated in 9/11 can split the earth in half, or it can be used to allow all people to live happily ever after with free energy. But he who controls the energy controls the people. Control of energy leads to destruction of the planet. So here we have to choose. But the biggest thing I think I would like listeners to get from this today is we all have a choice. The choice is real. We live happily ever after, or we destroy the planet. This is why I've been studying the evidence of what happened in 9/11. The evidence is central to all.
It's very much like the nuclear weapon that you can't put the genie back in the bottle. This is going to have, hopefully we can develop these peaceful applications. But the misuse of this idea in the form of destructive technology is always possible.
And we see that it was used for destructive purposes. We don't need to even know by whom, but we see that it exists, it's real. So why can't we use it for good purposes? If you're worried about it, not using it for good purposes because it might fall in the hands of, destruction, well, it's already been done. So that risk isn't there anymore. The good news is then you're free to use it for good purposes.
Right. That these good purposes could even be the $1.86 gallon gasoline, perhaps.
Or how about zero? Or changing over the infrastructure is another issue. But
well, there was another issue I wanted to raise, and that is, at one point we both had federal court cases against NIST contractors. NIST, of course, put out in the fall of 2006, its report about the destruction of the Twin Towers.
Apollo 5.
And more recently put out a draft report on the destruction of the WTC-7 building. And there was a 13-page decision against both of our cases, plus one filed by Ed Haas that tried to halt the NIST investigation of Building 7. And I can freely say, since I decided not to appeal my case, that the judge's decision was incoherent and almost beside the point. Well, we will discuss legal action against the NIST contractors who were covering up the real reasons for the WT. Before we had the break, Dr. Wood, I brought up this issue of the court case And we both had cases in the Southern District of New York in the federal court there. And the judge issued a 13-page decision dismissing our cases with prejudice. And at least for my, on my website, nomoregames.net, I critique the judge's decision paragraph by paragraph. But he never addressed my case directly. That is, he never addressed my arguments about why I'm a plaintiff who meets the letter of the law and the spirit and therefore have a cause of action that is rational and justified, and nor did he address the science I was bringing up that there could not have possibly been a plane crash at the World Trade Center, which I proved up in my opinion, and I've got plenty on my website that will give you the flavor of that. But you decided to pursue the appeal, and I think that's great. And one of the issues that comes to mind right away is that it's expensive to appeal. There was a printing bill of over $5,000 there for, what was it, 14 copies of your appeal to distribute to the court?
Yeah, we didn't make 14 copies. And then there's, of the pages that get submitted, is the appendix is everything that's been submitted in the past.
Okay, so the print bill is tremendous, and we did one round trying to raise some money, and I'm right while we're here, we are well over $1,000 short of covering that bill, and we Judy has a very fine attorney, very capable guy, Jerry V. Liepart, who is offering his services for no charge, but there are all these incidentals. Some of them, like this print bill, add up to significant money. Is there, if somebody wants to contribute, is there an address they could send a check to?
Yeah, I should put that on my website, but to Jerry Liepart's office.
Okay, so we could send them to the website, and you know, starting tomorrow, it'll be up there.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea. That Sally Pitcher in Jerry's Connecticut office.
Maybe you can go ahead and give the address now.
Yeah, I'll give the address.
Do you have it?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me. We'll do that in the next segment.
Okay. That'll work.
Okay, so if we go to content now. And what the heart of the case is, hey, the NIST contractors are covering up because they know better. We have SAIC and ARA who are actually directed energy weapons manufacturers who were in on the loot to put out this false story about what happened at the World Trade Center to the Twin Towers. And, okay, the district court judge dismissed your case. And now you're going to the appellate level. And to me, the most attractive thing was that this court of three appeals judges, correct me if I'm wrong, they actually have to confront your arguments, because in the normal course of argument or presentation, there is an oral hearing over the facts. So, and according to Attorney Liepart, the judges sometimes know the cases better than the attorneys.
Hmm.
So isn't that the hope that
Here
they actually have to address your arguments? I would hope.
Yeah, and there's hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. There's a document I got today showing that. An order had been signed to have a group look at the content.
Oh, really? The court directed some outside group to look at
content? I don't know if it's an outside group, but some other group to evaluate the content.
Of your submissions, huh?
Yep. Yeah,
oh, well,
affidavit.
That's good. And if the court did that, I would imagine it's part of the public record, although...
Right, yeah. I'm still, you know, not, I hope I'm not speaking out.
Right, not speaking out of turn, but I would argue it wouldn't be, but then again, I'm not your attorney.
Yeah. So,
okay, so what else can you tell us that... I wonder if in some months they're going to have to render a decision, and I would imagine there's going to be real content.
Yeah, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, from my point of view, where I can speak freely, if they're going to botch it and lying about it, they have to be on the record. Whatever they're going to say, you know, they're going to have to make some kind of plausible sounding argument.
One more comment I'd like to make on the troll trash, as I call it, the shenanigans that were going on, both on those forums as well as in email about the submission to Congress, is these folks supposedly pose as being for getting to the bottom of what happened 9/11, but yet they were celebrating the dismissals of these cases.
Oh yes, right.
And
we had one district judge in New York, a few blocks from the site of the World Trade Center, dismiss these cases with the back of his hand and never really wrestle with, to me, the devastating evidence we had exposing the NIST contractors. And the people out there on forums are cheering about this as if this judge was any different than a troll or some other uninformed person about this. To me, the thing that exposed his lack of seriousness was not just the decision itself, but our attorney, Liepert, submitted to the court a motion for reconsideration, and the judge dismissed it within hours on the same day. So, Liepert had drafted a very compelling, of course I'm biased, but a document of some 10 pages showing how the judge had misfired on so many fronts.
Well, it could be that, you know, there's so much noise out there. Unless you really are into it, you might think that it's bogus claims. You know, if you listen to the trolls on the forums.
Yes, well, right. If you never look at the evidence, this bothers me, it's a dead giveaway. Reprehensor, for example, rails against Fetzer, Reynolds, and Wood, but he never gives a link to Wood's website or mine or an article. So it's a completely biased, politicized presentation. Yes?
Yeah, they don't want you to look at the facts.
Oh, we're having a mechanical problem, electronic problem. Okay, Dr. Wood?
Yeah.
Are you still there?
Yeah, it sounds like the music for a break.
Okay, we'll be back on the other side of the break. And Dr. Wood, we were talking about your appeal and the news that the appellate court has, what should we say?
I just emailed it to you. You see what you think.
Yes, I saw this, and I'm trying to start up this JPG couple of documents here, but it looks like they've deferred to the merits panel. Well, you know, my question would be, who is the merits panel? Because
well,
it would be a matter of, is this, the worst would be involved parties like NIST contractors, but presumably these would be experts somehow credentialed to evaluate your submission.
Anyway, we don't know. We don't want to.
We don't know, but I can speculate. You can have no comment. But okay, anything else you can tell us about the appeal or the process that's ongoing?
Other side is asked for an extension of time to prepare a response. And that I have posted on my website, that they're granted an extension. They had requested one. So they're...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I would have a good feeling about that, but hey, it's probably neither here nor there.
Well, they're taking it seriously.
Yes, right. Well, there's a lot of good things, no matter how this turns out, in that they've got to, it sounds like, they have to address your arguments on a real basis, tit for tat, maybe, and that would be great. So we'll see how this goes, and we should tune into your website to see what information can be revealed along the way. But I would conjecture that certainly before the disappearance of 2009, there'll be some kind of an outcome. And of course, once the appellate court rules, the odds of getting to go one step higher in the Supreme Court are virtually nil. That's a high hurdle. Okay, so let's go to some other matters. How about an update on Hurricane Erin, which was off Long Island on the morning of 9/11, and the major media never alerted New Yorkers to, not in any serious mass broadcasting sense.
They did mention it, and it was out there on the Internet for me to find, so it would appear they weren't covering it up. But with a hurricane headed directly to New York, straight line towards New York City, and, okay, so you think the cold front's going to move out, but... How do you know? How do you know for sure?
Right,
just
and the way they always play this is that these things seem to be somewhat unpredictable in terms of their path.
Right, and this thing is, has been going in a straight line towards New York, and, let's say there's an hour delay or 2 hours delay before the cold front gets there, and the thing gets a little bit closer or stalls out longer. We hear about storm surges being a problem. And Manhattan is, 20 feet above sea level, something like that, above the water table. And
just
JFK,
a huge public safety risk going on there.
And how do you get people
evacuated? The day before, wasn't this a Category 2?
Category 3.
Category 3.
And the only reason why it downgraded is because it spread out. Like a figure skater spreads their arms out and they slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you take the area under the curve, the speed over the area, you're going to get a whole lot more energy than you're going to get with a little tiny thing that's going really fast. So, it's the category number isn't necessarily all there is to it. I think they might be changing that scale or having some other value into it.
This had a width of over 200 miles or something. It was very wide.
This thing was about 500.
500, wow.
Yeah, it got to that. It was smaller than that until 9/11. Then as it slowed down, when it pulled up to New York, it spread its wings out and slowed down. And for about 24 hours, it was right there. The wind speed stayed constant, the pressure stayed constant, and the hurricane stayed pretty much at the same distance from New York, which was the closest along its whole path. And it was close enough to create field effects over Manhattan. And how we know this is Newark Airport reported thunder. JFK reported thunder, LaGuardia reported thunder on 9/11, which is indicative of field effects.
Yeah, these are stunning discoveries for what we thought was a crystal perfect day, that morning of 9/11.
Matter of fact, that was one of the comments that I submitted to NIST for Building 7. They started out their report saying it was, you know, perfect weather and everything was fine. Wait a minute. Flag on the play.
I beg to differ, au contraire.
But on
well,
the morning of 9/11...
In terms of the role of the media, though, you're not willing to make such a... an expansive indictment of them as I would be, because they're I thought that they gave it little or no coverage despite this being a huge story.
Yeah, the best part is the morning. This is, you know, people say, well, a lot was going on 9/11, but at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, it was a normal day. And on the morning news, on the weather maps, I've got a sample of a couple of screenshots where they don't have this hurricane out, you know, the icon. It looks like a little pinwheel that they stick on these weather maps. They show that patch of the ocean, but they don't show the pinwheel out there. How much trouble is it to put up that icon on the screen?
Yeah, and the media, they want viewers and, hey, you know, the weatherchannel.com, and all, they love these stories. The headline news people. Ordinarily, you know, the fear factor is always draws viewers, and that creates advertising, and that creates revenue. So this lackadaisical attitude is very suspicious.
Across the board, and there was not, like, headlines in the paper, you know, this Category 3 hurricane aimed right to New York.
Yeah, and they're making a big yawn out of it, not newsworthy. This is Morgan Reynolds on the Dynamic Duo interviewing Dr. Judy Wood about 9/11 research. Please return after the break. And Dr. Wood sent me a version of this motion that in which the court, very interesting, has deferred to the merits panel. I just wonder what that is. Well, we'll find out eventually.
It seems like a good thing, because if somebody's going to look at the merits of it, that's something that wasn't looked at before.
Right. I don't want them of the NIST contractor persuasion, though. It matters so much who the people are. It reminds me of the early days of the Reagan administration, where the motto was, people are policy.
Yeah.
Okay, but hey, it's ongoing. That's exciting. I had some postpartum depression when my case was not appealed. But we only needed one of these meritorious cases to go forward.
Yeah,
okay, we
nice
were talking about Hurricane Erin, and I was reminded in that conversation of Kevin Barrett interviewing David Ray Griffin, and they had Sheldon call in from Tucson, Arizona, and he wanted to know from David Ray Griffin, who's perhaps the leading author on 9/11, at least from the dissident point of view, the non-official research community investigating 9/11, and Sheldon wanted to know, well, what's wrong with Dr. Judy Wood's work? And my assessment is that David Ray Griffin never answered the question. It was always, as usual, it was converted into whether Dr. Judy Wood or Morgan Reynolds or anybody on the outs has the right to do the work they want to do and put it out there and see if anybody is listening. And so I really wonder when David Ray Griffin is going to answer the question. Because here we are talking about Hurricane Erin. And I want to have David Ray Griffin weigh in on that. You're using mainstream data sources. I mean, is somebody going to say it wasn't out there? I mean, what are they going to do with this?
It was interesting how I found it. I was looking at where the plume goes up and wanted to get a better picture and decided to look at weather satellite images to see if I could see the plume. And then I found this weather satellite image in this big, huge hurricane there. It's like, huh?
Oh, well, zounds, right.
And it's got this weird eye in it that's the shape of a pentagon, you know, straight sides, with these, looks like worms in the middle.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it's got a real hole in the center.
Right, it looks like, you know, those hedge mazes that they grow? You know,
yeah.
A maze made of green hedges? That's what it looks like, except they're white in there. Wind back and forth.
So, you know, the evidence suggests there's something very odd, unnatural about this hurricane.
And I tried to compare it with other hurricanes, and I went through many different seasons, and I couldn't find any other ones that took that path. They typically, you know, come in down by Florida and then sweep up the coast or curve up earlier. This one went straight, you know, up at 45-degree angle with the longitude-latitude maps, you know, goes past Bermuda, straight towards New York, gets there, stops, and then makes the 110-degree turn, go directly east, and then goes back to kind of a normal path going up the East Coast.
And stands at attention there offshore.
Yeah, like showed up to work that morning.
Right.
Reporting for duty.
110 degrees reminds me of the turn that the Kennedy limo and parade group made in front of the Dallas Book Depository, but that's another crime. But this takes us off into another edgy area, doesn't it, that there is some evidence that the government has some means of controlling certain weather patterns or cooking up a storm or exacerbating the intensity of the storm.
If it was there just by coincidence and they can't control weather, they're going to be a little bit concerned that what if, you know, the probability doesn't have it, but what if it breaks through the cold front and or stalls out there and you have this huge storm surge and whatnot. Maybe you should get ready to start evacuating people, or at least let them know that this might be an issue, so people can voluntarily be bailing out of there. And
right.
The fact that it's not mentioned means that they are so sure, they're 100% sure, that that thing isn't going to, you know, cause a problem, that it's not going to stall out there any longer than X number of hours and be gone before there's a storm surge issue. I'm not talking about even making landfall, but just the storm surge aspect.
Right, right. Yeah, a wall of water of 5 feet high or higher. Yeah,
you
get
the JFK Airport.
If it's a big enough surge.
Yeah. And I do know they took the military ships out to sea that were docked there.
Hmm. You know, this another parallel pops to mind is the Secret Service not moving President Bush down there at that Sarasota, Florida school that he was at. And he didn't leave the building until the scheduled time at 9:30, I believe it was. But here again, this suggests, we know what we're doing and what's happening and there's no danger. It was
mm-hmm.
completely contrary to Secret Service rules.
So,
much different situation, but the same kind of certainty regarding the behavior of what the result's going to be.
Yeah, there's no danger.
Okay, on the other side of the break, I think I need to find out if this Aaron research has gained any traction out there in the 9/11 community. This is Morgan Reynolds with the Dynamic Duo interviewing Dr. Judy Wood. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo during our last week of production here on GCN. I am Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today, sitting in for Jim Fetzer on a cool Thursday in November. My special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood, the leading physical scientist investigating what happened at the World Trade Center on the morning of 9/11/2001, in my less than humble opinion. And her website is Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood, WOOD.com. And if you want to call in, our number is 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9939. And Dr. Wood and her work continues to be attacked in the 9/11 truth movement, so-called, in impressive quantity, if not quality. That's what I find lacking. And one thought I have is that suppose David Ray Griffin brought up this Aaron hurricane phenomenon that was going on the day before and then the morning of 9/11. If he brought this result forward and the evidence in favor of it, I would think the so-called 9/11 truth movement would be up in arms about it and it would be embraced. It's not hard to understand a hurricane being hidden or overlooked by the media and the government. And what we have is a situation, though, where the David Ray Griffins of the world are ignoring this just as the mainstream media do. And instead, Judy Wood and her intellectual allies or friends have got to point out this appalling and amazing event on 9/11. And I wonder, Dr. Wood, is this knowledge of Aaron, do you perceive it gaining any traction out there in the general public or in the 9/11 community?
It's interesting. I've been on several talk shows where the host was unaware of the hurricane. I bring it up, and they kind of go speechless. And you know, if you listen carefully, you might hear a clatter of keyboard, you know, as they're Googling something. Almost like they might doubt because they hadn't heard of it.
Which shows how amazing it is.
Yeah.
What a betrayal.
Yeah.
These people in the self-proclaimed, well, the controlling 9/11 truth movement seem to ignore it.
One fascinating thing was on this particular forum, you talk about how they could react to this hurricane. One was denying there was a hurricane there. I was wanting to argue that and see if it worked.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned in the previous segment. I mean, what are they going to do, deny it was there?
Yeah.
I guess some do. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Well, of course, this is a pretty general phenomenon in that we could go on to your many other discoveries about what the evidence shows at the crime scene. Right? I mean, this is a perfectly general principle that they're going to ignore the real evidence. And then run off and claim, for example, that a welding material called thermite accounts for all the data. Just incredible breadth of anomalous effects at the World Trade Center.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how thinking people can be somehow turned into non-thinking people almost. Maybe it's human nature to want to run with the herd. So if the herd is running in the wrong direction, how many folks will stop and check?
Yeah, you would think, especially among people with writing skills and research experience, that they would be less prone to this. But there's so much on the line here.
Yeah,
I
think a lot of people are scared.
Pardon?
I think a lot of people are scared, and they want to run with the herd for safety.
Yeah. But the 9/11 truth orthodoxy defends airplane crashes, mostly by airliners, too. So that's in line with the official propaganda, the official myths. And they also want to claim that some kind of conventional explosive, by and large, most adhere to this conventional, demolition explosives in the building. And that's also a bodyguards the official story, in a sense, because it's a fallback position. You could still blame Arab terrorists for bringing in explosives, or their hirees.
Yeah, but also it was kind of interesting that I think it was in 2006. Stephen Jones was saying it would take something like 10 people, 10 trips to put enough explosives in the building. Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
that's hard to credit, isn't it?
Yeah.
How are you going to destroy the core?
And then later we have Greg Jenkins, who says it takes 5 times the world's amount of energy to destroy the towers. So are they still there? But then how can the 10 people, 10 trips do it?
Yeah, pretty amazing. I think those guys need to thrash this out.
Yeah, they need to get together and sort out what the story is.
And yet their intellectual allies and apparently have no... that's a completely contrary opinions or propositions. They can't both possibly be true. At least if 10 trips by 10 people are carrying anything conventional is... Stephen Jones. What about the nuclear, or these mini nukes type hypothesis?
I'm not sure what drives that, because if you had, any kind of nuke around there, why do you have unburned paper?
Yeah, there'd be tremendous heat.
And why do you have intact bathtub? And actually, the reports were that dust cloud that came rolling down the streets was cooler than ambient temperature. Initially.
Right. So the key pieces of evidence are contrary to this. And by the bathtub, Dr. Wood means this slurry wall that went down 7 stories, I believe, or at least 70 feet to bedrock, and kept the World Trade Center complex dry, from invasion by the Hudson River.
And the damage,
and yet, this thing could not withstand nuclear explosions.
And the damage that it did suffer came from, the majority of it came from the earth-moving equipment in the days following 9/11. And they figured that out, and they had to establish new rules as to what, piece of machinery could move where and how close to another piece, because it was starting to really destroy the bathtub over in that corner. They're driving these, earthmoving equipment over the wall.
Right. And another piece about that was, I remember reading, I believe it was in one of these books about Ground Zero work, where this crew was trying to figure out how to best to take down those 10-story remnants that were left standing from both towers, a couple of these walls. And it was a very delicate operation because they didn't want to damage anything, any part of the bathtub. And they did some ad hoc stuff that wasn't working initially, and it was a very difficult thing. But this is Morgan Reynolds interviewing Dr. Judy Wood on 9/11. Please hurry back after the break. That website is drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. And if you want to call in, it's 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. And one more plug I want to make is that I have the address if you want to contribute to defray a portion of the cost of her appeal in the federal courts in New York State, the appeal of her suit against NIST contractors for their cover-up regarding what destroyed the Twin Towers. You should send a contribution to Sally Pitcher. Pitcher is P-I-T-C-H-E-R, at the office of Jerry Liepart, L-E-A-P-H-A-R-T, Jerry Liepart, 8 West Street, that's 8 West Street, Suite 203, Danbury, Connecticut, 06810. Let me give that one more time. Sally Pitcher at the office of Jerry Liepart, 8 West Street, Suite 203, Danbury, Connecticut, 06810. And if you go to drjudywood.com tomorrow, probably tonight, she'll have that information for you. Okay, Dr. Wood, looking over so much of your recent work, what strikes you as the best thing to talk about here? We've got only a few minutes left in this segment.
Well, I've got this Cliff Notes page. You can get to it from my homepage or just
okay.
go to drjudywood.com/WTC.
Okay, Cliff Notes. Flashing right toward the top of her website. Aha moments. Some of the photos that inspired Judy Wood.
Just some of the photos that really start meaning something to me, and I gave them names so that we can refer to them by names, not figure numbers, and they really stick in your mind. I've also added a couple of videos at the top, videos that people may not have seen before. Like the one on the right has been recently put out there, that we are trained to think something when we see a picture. We're told what it is, and then we tend not to question it. And it gets memorized, so our response is memorized, and we don't see the evidence that's in them. So it's helpful to look at new pictures that we've not seen before or new videos. But on this page, I've got various categories of the evidence. And whatever happened, it needs to explain each one of these categories of evidence, like the debris or lack of. You know.
Yeah, whatever method was used to create this, so many anomalous forms of destruction.
And one thing I think is pretty funny, at the bottom of that section, I've got some orange signs about blasting zones. If you're going to do a controlled demolition and to get the sequencing right, they're radio controlled. Normal blasting sites, there's these signs that say turn off two-way radio and cell phone. Now imagine being able to do that on a Tuesday morning in Manhattan.
Yeah, you get some crowded airwaves there, don't you?
Yeah, how are you going to get a signal to trigger, you know, any kind of detonations?
Yeah, this goes through this whole. We co-authored an article on your website regarding the thermite hypothesis, and that's just one of its many defects.
Right, and yeah, it was never. There's no rebuttal to that ever. It couldn't be.
No. Where's the proof of concept? You know, one of the simple things was, what's the tallest building that's ever been dropped by conventional demolition? I gather, what was that Hudson department store in Detroit? It was, what, 42 stories?
39.
At any rate, nothing like a quarter mile tall.
And it was up spilling across the street.
Well, we had one wall of columns, beams there go reach over toward the WFC. But, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
And that's one of the things I put in my comments to NIST for Building 7, is it literally did not cross the street over to the postal building. It didn't get on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
A 47-story building, you know, goes straight down and doesn't spill across, you know, three lanes of traffic.
Yeah. And where does that sit? Do you expect them to put, they were soliciting comments on their draft for their fake story about what caused the destruction of Building 7. Are they going to come out with a final report then at some unknown date?
Well, there's various issues that I've brought up in my comments to them, sort of putting them on notice that they're now informed that these major defects in their report, such as they used lack of bomb sounds, lack of, you know, loud sounds, to dismiss the bombs in the building hypothesis. But they didn't use that same explanation for why it doesn't dismiss their hypothesis as well. You know, the amount material that came crashing down, or should have, is equivalent to about 20,000 Big Mac dump trucks. So it should have been like raining dump trucks. And this is talking about how low-level conversations down the street the cameras could pick up. You know, basically the, quote, collapse was whisper quiet. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, all that steel and other hard objects crashing down.
And does it make a sound, and it doesn't make the ground shake? Kind of makes you wonder if it did come down.
Wasn't even, a seismic reading equivalent to a jackhammer, was it?
It's something like that, and I calculated if you get the bottom 2.5 stories, you know, that same proportion of the building, just the bottom 2.5 stories and drop that, you would get that. What about those other ones?
It's just appalling, the level of corruption in this country where bureaucrats that are being paid, $100,000 a year plus fringe benefits will prostitute themselves for this kind of set of lies in the most important political horrific event, taking the lives of all these innocents. You know, it's just where is this country at? What does that tell you?
Where we have, you know, this need for energy, clean and free energy, and, you know, why not at least study what happened? Unless you
right,
don't
yeah, yeah, that's the, we can do good out of this evil, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Wood, you're a courageous and brilliant investigator. Thank the heavens we have her on our side, the side of real 9/11 truth, the true truth, not the lies that the Orthodox movement's giving us. This is Morgan Reynolds for the Dynamic Duo, bidding you adieu and thanking you for listening, and thank you, Dr. Wood.
Thank you so much for having me on.